Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Soham samam nayamayat sapomaya. Prajapati nam abhivandita sati. Astaya yogam nipunam samahita.
Astaya yogam nipunam samahita.
Hanna jagatam yasatma sambhava. Soham samam nayamaya sapomaya.
Soham samam nayamaya sapomaya.
Prajapati nam abhimanyata pati.
Prajapati nam abhimanyata pati.
Astaya yogam nipunam samahitat.
Astaya yogam nipunam samahitat.
Sanyajagatyam yatatma sambhava.
Sanyajagatyam yatatma sambhava.
Properly understood.
Yatha, from whom? Atma, self. Sambhava, generates. Although I am known as the great Brahma, perfect in the specific succession of Vedic wisdom, and although I have undergone all austerities and am an expert in mystic vows and self-realization, and although I am recognized as such by the great forefathers of living entities who offer me respectful obeisances, still I cannot understand him, the Lord, the very source of my birth. Brahma, the greatest of all living creatures of the universe, is admitting his failure to know the Supreme Lord, despite his vast learning and Vedic wisdom, despite his austerity, penance, mystic powers, and self-realization, and despite being worshipped by the great Tathagata, the forefathers of the universe. So these qualifications are not sufficient to know the Supreme Lord. Brahmaji could understand the Lord to a little extent only when he was trying to serve him by the eagerness of his heart. Her doubt comes to the top. This is the devotional service move. Therefore, the Lord can be known only by the sincere mood of eagerness for service, and not by any amount of material qualifications, as scientists or speculative philosophers, or by attainment of mystic powers. This fact is clearly corroborated in the Bhagavad Gita. Brahma-bhuta prasanna-atma na shrotati na kamsati samasareshu bhuteshu madhavyam bhavate param bhakyamam abhijanati yāvanyasya-sāsya-sāsya-sāsya Brahman Satyaka Yatva Vishkeka Anandalam. Only self-realization by attainment of the above high qualifications of faith, wisdom, austerity, and so forth can help one on the path of devotional service. But failing in devotional service, one remains still imperfect, because even in that position of self-realization, one cannot exactly know the Supreme Lord. By self-realization, one is qualified to become a devotee. And the devotee, by service mood, bhakti, only can gradually know his personality of God. One should not, however, misunderstand the import of Vishuddha and divinity as referring to merging into the existence of the Supreme. Even in material existence, one is immersed in the existence of the Lord. No materialist can disentangle self from matter, for the self is merged in the external energy of the Lord. As no layman can separate butter from milk, no one can extricate the merged self from matter by acquiring some material qualifications. This visuddhi by devotion of God means to be able to participate in the association of the Lord in person. Bhakti, or devotional service to the Lord, means to become free from material entanglement and then to enter into the kingdom of God, becoming one like Him. Losing one's individuality is not the aim of Bhakti Yoga or of the devotion of the Lord. There are five types of liberation, one of which is called Sayujya Mukti, or being merged into the existence or body of the Lord. The other forms of liberation maintain the individuality of the particle soul and involve being always engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. The word visuddhi, used in the verses of the Bhagavad Gita, is thus meant for the devotees who are not at all anxious for any kind of liberation. The devotees are satisfied simply in being engaged in the service of the Lord, regardless of the situation. Lord Brahma is the first living being who directly learned the Vedic wisdom from the Lord. Therefore, who can be a more learned Vedanta than Lord Brahma? He admits that in spite of his perfect knowledge in the Vedas, he was unable to know the glories of the Lord. Since no one can be more than Lord Brahma, how can a so-called Vedantist be perfectly cognizant of the Absolute Truth? The so-called Vedantist, therefore, cannot enter into the existence of the Lord without being trained in the matter of Bhakti Vedanta, or Vedanta plus Bhakti. Vedanta means self-realization, and Bhakti means realization of the personality Godhead to some extent. No one can know the personality Godhead in full, but at least to a certain extent one can know the Absolute Truth, the personality of Godhead, by self-surrender and a devotional attitude and by nothing else. In the Brahma Sahita also, it is said, Vedeshu Durabham, or simply by study of Vedanta, one can hardly find out the existence of the personality of Godhead. But the Lord is Adurabham Atma Bhakta, very easily available to his devotees. Śrīla Vyāsadeva, therefore, was not satisfied simply with compiling the Vedanta Sutra, but over and above this, by the advice of his spiritual master Narada, he compiled the Śrīmad Bhāgavatam in order to understand the real import of Vedanta. Śrīmad Bhāgavatam, therefore, is the absolute key. Although I am known as the great Brahma, perfect in the disciplic succession of Vedic wisdom, and although I have undergone all austerities, and am an expert in mystic powers and self-liberation, and although I am recognized as such by the great forefathers of the living entities who offer me respectful obeisances, still I cannot understand him, the Lord, the very source of my birth. Once again, we are learning from Lord Brahma's experience. Krishna consciousness can be experienced. It is not religious belief in its entirety. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says, this most confidential knowledge, this king of all knowledge, can be directly perceived, but directly perceived by the purified self. Krishna consciousness is for the senses. That's good news to you all because everybody has hungry senses. Existence, whether in material or spiritual, means senses. This is a big point for us to understand. Because we are afraid of renouncing our material connections by thinking that we know that we have nothing to do with senses and spiritual perception. Our hang-up is our senses. Our senses are very eager. In both material life and in spiritual life, the senses are eager. The material body has senses, and the spiritual body has senses. But when we are embedded in material existence, we have lost all memory of how our spiritual senses function in spiritual relationships. In the purport, Srila Prabhupada explains that he wants to talk about merging. You should understand that you are merged in the material nature. No materialist can disentangle self from matter, for the self is merged in the external energy of the Lord. As no layman can separate water from milk, no one can extricate the merged self from matter by acquiring some material qualifications. So this is another theme that we stress here, how the living entity is merged into material nature, so much so you think it's a normal condition. The example given in the Shastra is like a worm appreciates being in school. appreciate being in material nature. Try to understand how the worm might feel.
Very warm.
You need flavors this time. What is a person to eat? Very unique this time. Warm, there is texture. So this is like our situation in material existence. Why do we feel comfortable being merged in matter? You have to ask yourself that question. Yesterday we talked about this body just being a time bomb and the length of the fuse or how the clock is set on your body. You don't know. Still you feel comfortable in it. That is amazing. That shows you that even the external energy of Krishna is inconceivable. Here you are, the spirit soul, feeling so cozy, embedded in matter. This matter can do nothing for you. Your body simply provides you with problems. It's just a matter of time. But you just focus on some passionate thrill and think it's going to be all right. If you look at the situation objectively, you understand it's just a matter of time for your body going into problems. But it's like a clock. Sometimes in houses, they have house clocks. Grandfather had a grandfather's clock. And my brother and I used to always, when we visited our grandparents, we would sleep in the living room. They had a little house that rolled out to the door. And so they had this big grandfather clock in the living room. So all night long, you just sit. I remember that. And now I understand. The body is the same thing. The body is a mechanism, and you don't hear it, but it's going, tick, tock, tick, tock, tick, tock. We get the feeling that this body is just going to be around for a long time. It's not eternal, but it's going to be around for a long time. It's going to allow me to fulfill all my desires. But having a body. Material nature gave me a body, so all my desires will be fulfilled. You don't hear. And then, what would happen if you put two grandfather clocks together? You have the male grandfather clock and the female grandfather clock. What's going on? Just louder ticking of the clock. Two grandfather clocks together. Yeah, just make a loud tick, stop, tick, stop. But still, the deluded man and woman don't hear that. They're just caught up in how their ears are becoming intertwined. Just see how our ears are mixing. We're really hitting it off great. We're resonating. We're vibrating. We don't hear that the ticking has simply become louder. Two clocks together make a louder sound. The intelligent person can hear that louder ticking and understand that the problems of life have not eased. They will be. You've got two time-limited mechanisms coming together. Like in cartoons, you have little boys, you know, they always had these bombs, like some kind of ball or long fuse. They still have that in cartoons. So, you know, like foolish character in the cartoon doing this and that. Meanwhile, you know, this bomb is about to explode. Do you remember that? Yeah. These cartoon characters, Wile E. Coyote, Creepers Like That. I used to watch Wile E. Coyote, Roadrunner. Every kid would delight in these things. And these guys were always getting blown up by these time bombs. You know, their Wile E. Coyote is, you know, and his mates are having a good time. And meanwhile, there's this bomb, you know, with a fuse that's been lit. And, you know, you're watching. watching the plane travel along the line of a fuse of the guys in the cartoon just enjoying them. Of course, in the cartoon, they always live after the explosion. But not in life. Now, this is what's going on. We have these bodies which are time mechanisms. We don't know when the end is coming. This last year in Colombia, the guerrillas in Colombia, is something that outraged everybody. They went to some landowner, in this case it was a woman. They were devils of the land, take whatever they can to finance the revolution. So they just terrorizing people to scare them. Get off your land, make the government surrender to us. So what did they do to her? They put around her neck like in the shape of a U with a lock at the end. Plastic explosive in the shape of a U. And then it was locked around her neck. And it was time. None of that. You can imagine that you are in your home very comfortably. Standing in the room, having a nice night around in the living room with hockey. And then some terrorists break in. And you're comfortable here now. So what's the first thing you do?
Call the police squad.
You would do that. Yes. Just that you would. But an ordinary person would immediately take a material solution. Call the bomb squad. So that's what they did in Colombia. The bomb squad came and they were trying this way and that way how to get this thing off the woman, you know. They knew that, you know, they heard the ticking, but they, you know, no one knew when it was going to go off. But, you know, the sight of this woman, I saw a picture of it. There she was, completely bewildered and strange. This thing was wedged, locked around her neck. So then what finally happened? While the bomb squad is trying somehow to get this thing off of her neck, she was killed her and she made the bomb squad. So they had a picture of her 2 hours before it was supposed to be the fight. It was supposed to be over. So of course the whole country freaked out. All those rebels have gone too far this time. Gift to the USA, military fight, help out your capitalist development. Our bodies are like that. That instant made me think. This is exactly what the body is.
You have no idea when it's going to go off, and people are trying to help you.
Oh, your body, your body. What can we do for your body? We'll help you.
And while they're trying to help you, you get blown up, and they get blown up too. And people call that help,
love, care, and compassion.
When it's actually just mutual, making mutual contributions to remain in ignorance. Therefore, yesterday we were speaking, no, it was Sunday, we were speaking about evaluating your relationships.
How many of you are strong enough to do that, to evaluate your relationships free from influence of lust?
Now, when lust is involved, you can't make a proper evaluation. You stop to explain that.
What's the subject? Streamers not about it.
Pūsas kriya vitani bhāvanitam yoga saupīrā grandamāhu. When the man and woman clap, mess their ears together, then there's kriya grandam, the hard knot in the heart form. But you know how to make a knot? You take two strings and you tie them together and tie another. You got this knot, this big ball of knot. But that's actually what happens. The gross and subtle bodies combine, so to speak. And then you become oblivious to the real problems of life. You get this certain kind of feeling out of the combination of the gross and subtle bodies. The subtle body likes kind of feeling that another subtle body is kind of merged with me. It seems to add something to life. But actually, all that's going on is that the relationship is a device for ignoring reality. You create a whole special dimension that actually doesn't exist. Like fog. The combination creates a fog, and you like it. Oh, look at this fog. Isn't it nice that you can't see? You ever driven along on a foggy road? You ever had foggy days in one of them? Is that the other? Sometimes you get so sick you can't see far ahead. Sometimes you just imagine yourself appreciating the fog.
Wow, you can't even see 3 meters ahead of us. Isn't that great? Huh. How thick the fog is.
That's what happens in a materialistic relationship. Combination of man and woman. They increase the fog and they think it's oh, so delightful. It's nice and damp and cold. You can't see. And you can imagine. The sun is rising, and what happens when the sun comes out? The fog dissipates. You can imagine yourself, no, don't let the sun come up. We want to stay with the fog. We like this cold, damp, thick fog. No, we don't want to see. And then your partner tells you, you
didn't belong together. I don't mind you being here. I don't mind you being a fool. This is all I need.
That's what it's all about. That's actually what's going on.
I don't mind being ignorant. Let me be ignorant of you. What was recording the sloka by Albert Camus on Sunday?
Don't try to lead me. Don't try to follow me. Just walk together with me. Now, Westerners think that sounds very noble, very honest. Yeah, no one knows anything, so how can you lead? If you've got integrity, you don't try to lead anyone, because we're all just, you know, stumbling around in darkness. So, an honest person won't try to lead someone and tell someone, oh, I have the truth, follow me. And also, an honest person won't follow anyone. But you know, no one knows anything more than you. Everyone's equal in their ignorance. So honesty and integrity means don't try to lead anyone, and don't follow anyone. But what should you do? Walk together. That's just the invasion. That's the gratification. I'm just the chaos. I remember. I was a little boy. I was in the library and get books. I think when I was around
8 or 9 years old, I got these books in the library, science fiction called When Worlds Collide. It was about how a meteor was bearing down on the Earth and was going to crash into the Earth. And so the fortunate people, very few of them, were put on a space, a rocket ship to go to another planet. And so the book describes, of course, there was a man and woman involved, but in those days, back in the 50s, there was nothing explicit in the book. The last scene of the book I remember very vividly. The meteor is, they can see the meteor approaching in the sky, and the rocket's about to take off from Cape Canaveral, and it was Cape Kennedy now in Florida. And millions of people are trying to storm the rocket ship and get a plane on board. It's totally irrational, you know. I mean, how can millions of people fit on this rocket ship? You know? And the meteor, you can see the meteor approaching in the sky, and the natural disturbances are happening as the meteor is upsetting the orbit of the Earth planet, and you know, everyone's going nuts, but some or other these fortunate people got onto the rocket ship, and they're going to go to another planet to start a new civilization and destroy another planet. So there was a, yeah, and the hero, of course, was a hero and a heroine in the 50s, then, you know, upright, you know, competent, expert man, and a submissive female, that's what it was back in the 50s, you know? kind of a sophisticated housewife. And a man was, you know, Mr. Breadwinner. And so, they weren't married, you know. There was no mention of, you know, in fact, they were married in the book. And, but they, you know, during the course of preparing for the Holocaust, they had gotten to know one another. So, anyway, finally at the last page of the book, the rocket ship is taking off. The launching pad, millions of people are around, you know, give me a place on the rocket ship. The meteor is bearing down on the planet, you see it approaching, and then the rocket ship takes off with something like 50 people going to go restart Earth's civilization on a new planet. So then they go inside the rocket ship to last scene, you know, what the characters are thinking and doing, and describe the man hero. That's how the book ended. I read this book 8 years old. What was I thinking? What could he do? You know, he doesn't know what's going to be on the new planet, and here he is carrying on like this. I remember I was 8 years old thinking that. What's going on here, you know? I think it's, you know, of course I was a strict Christian then, you know, going to church at least twice a week, but what's this guy up to here? Long baby here, you know? That's all it said, the whole, you know, the 50s book, so that's all, you know, just that was it. Nothing else, the whole book, you know, that was risque, but that last line. So, this is crazy. They don't know what the next planet's going to be like. And, you know, here he is. He's already knocked her up. And, you know, that's back. They don't use that term anymore, do they? He already knocked her up, you know. And they have no idea what the life on the next planet's going to be. You know, it's such a calamitous situation. And here they are carrying on like this. I remember thinking that when I was 8 years old. I couldn't figure it all out, all the biology, you know. And this doesn't make sense. I mean, you know, millions of people are right below on the ground as the rocket ship takes off, all clamoring, save us, save us, we want to go on the rocket ship. And these fortunate 30 people are taking off in the rocket ship for a new planet. And meanwhile, you know, here's the man and the woman, the hero, you know, they've already cohabited, you know,
thinking about life on the new planet, thinking about the child that he knew lay within the this is actually an accurate example of how people live life.
They don't think.
They don't care. The more ignorant the relationship, the better. Right? The more ignorant and sensuous, the better. If you could just drop your brain and feel it, then your life is successful. These are illusory relationships. You can just imagine telling someone, you know, I wonder if I don't think about anything. That's considered a compliment these days. When I'm with you, I'm totally brain dead.
That's a compliment. Oh, how wonderful. Thank you so much for telling me that.
This is the standard these days. So therefore, it takes a very strong person to evaluate relationships and see, are they based on reality or not? The last thing you want is an illusory relationship, which is just like a weight around your neck, like those plastic spoons that are locked on the front of your neck. That's the last thing you want. But because there's passion, you'll agree for anything. Especially the young bodies. Not only the young bodies, but the older bodies. Especially when you're young, you're teen and crunchy. Passion has got to be there. It's just like the glue that just keeps your life together. But we tell foolish lessons. Danger. Remember we told you, just drop the passion and you'll see the truth of the relationship. Remember we told you that? Faith. You take your personal testimony. As soon as the passion dropped out, then all of a sudden, everything became clear. Where everybody's at, right? These very few people will have that determination. You can try the experiment. 1 minute you were making plans to be together forever, right? Forever. And we actually discussed that, how they're going to be together forever. Next minute you just modify a few of the variables in the relationship and suddenly you became not just a desirable person. You were telling us how. You were telling us. It's like a sport, you know?
Now inside your mind and wiggle around.
The ladies are always getting embarrassed. It's part of the sport, right? So, what is the use of all this? What does this actually do for you? We need healthy, constructive relationships. We're not saying no relationships, we're saying have real relationships in relation to Krishna. But as long as the relationships are embedded within matter, then there cannot be any reality, there cannot be any happiness. We're trying to establish Krishna conscious relationships. We're not saying no one should have marriages, no one should associate with the opposite sex. But we're saying it should be for real. The relationship with the same sex should also be for real. Real relationships are not about the body, they're about the spirit soul. So even amongst devotees, when there's some disagreement about how things should be done, at least devotees know it's all in relation to how to serve Krishna. Therefore, it's still on the platform of reality. But the question is, how to serve Krishna better? Making cookies, and the husband was, you know, something existing, giving some pointers to what seems to be about this, to be about that. I'll help the wife by giving her a few pointers, you know. Yeah, surely she'll appreciate, you know. Men are always rational like that, very solution oriented. Oh, you're making Mars? Well, everyone knows she likes my cookies the best. And your cookies, you like that? They retort. Let me make my own cookies! Don't try to tell me what to do. I want to make my own cookies. Even increase the consciousness, you know, there can be these moments. But at least you have the satisfaction of understanding that it's all for you're trying to serve Krishna, that you can get better and better and better. So at least the basis of reality is there. But just imagine there's no connection to Krishna. What hope is there for you? You're just like two fools drowning in ignorance, telling each other very nice things as you're drowning. You can imagine, there you are, your boyfriend or girlfriend, you're drowning, and you're while you're going down, you're telling each other, oh, I just love the way you spit out water. A lovely swimsuit, my dear. How to stay away from these kind of illusions? If you dedicate your intelligence to trying to understand Krishna, automatically you have something better to do. Trying to understand Krishna will absorb your whole life. It will absorb all your senses, not just intellect. Intelligence is there, so it has to be used. But trying to understand Krishna involves your tongue, involves your hands, your legs. Even it can involve the genitals. That's why Krishna says, Dharma Bhuta Bhutti, Dharma Bhuta. Krishna says, I am sex life in accordance to Dharma, religious principles. So if that is your ashram, you can even experience Krishna consciousness in that way. So, bhakti involves all the senses. When all the senses are engaged in Krishna service, then you can understand Krishna. It's not just a question of intellectual activity. This is what Lord Brahma is letting you know. He says, although I'm known as the great Brahma, perfect in the disciplined succession of Vedic wisdom, and although I have undergone all austerity and am an expert in and self-realization. And although I am recognized as such by the great forefathers of the living entity who offer me respectful obeisances, still I cannot understand Him, the Lord, the very source of my birth. Now, Brahma cannot understand Krishna fully. How can an ordinary living entity? The Lord says this in Bhagavad Gita. Name the Jew Sura Jana, Kavavanda Maharshaya, Adi Adiye Raman, Maharshaya, Sutadita. Krishna says, no one understands us, not even the greatest demigod, the greatest cosmic sages. No one knows him because in every case, he is the origin of them. Since Krishna is there before them, they can't understand him fully. Because they're just appearing within time, and Krishna is beyond time. In fact, time is just a potency of the Lord, that's all. Sometimes people ask questions, well, if Krishna is unlimited, can he ever do something that he doesn't know? Can he ever not know himself? Yes. Krishna's potencies are expanding unlimitedly.
But also the knowledge is expanding unlimitedly.
So, looking at it from one side, you can say that as Krishna's potencies expand, he doesn't know himself. That's just looking at one side, though. But you have to look simultaneously on the other side, that his knowledge is also expanding. So if you want to put the whole thing in the context of the three phases of time, past, present, and future, and do it, you could say, first he expands, and then he knows himself, his new expansion, he knows himself. But it's not like that, first and then, it's all simultaneous. His existence expands and his knowledge expands. Therefore, you can say and you cannot say that Krishna can do something that he doesn't know. Or it's possible that Krishna doesn't understand himself. The answer is yes and no. Because in order to understand the question, you have to get beyond time. But it's not that step one, Krishna's potencies expand. Step two, then he, you know, has to catch up. They catch up, you know, sports, you know, catch up with his potencies. Now I've got to understand myself because at this moment I don't understand myself. No, it's all going on simultaneously because Krishna is beyond time. It's interesting when you understand how much of your metaphysical framework is time bound. And that prevents you from understanding Srimad Bhagavatam. Like, when did we come to the material world? You can't ask that question because the backdrop of your question is the spiritual world. So you say, when did I come to the material world? From the spiritual point of view, there's no when. And then, because material nature is so complicated and unlimited in the sense that materially it's not possible to get to the end of it. It is limited, but with limited intelligence, you can't get to the end of it. So, even from the material point of view, you can't trace out your entry into the material world. You feel like it's too complicated, the material existence is too bad. And certainly from the spiritual point of view, you can't figure it out because there's no way in spiritual existence. So, it's liberating to understand how much of your intelligence is time bound. Now, since even Brahma admits he can't understand Krishna fully, what are we supposed to do with our intelligence? Our intelligence is meant for taking the information that has been given to us, applying it, and then we will see. That's the wonder to evolve us. They are the perfect balance of knowledge, as conventionally known, because knowledge is information, and impetus for having eagerness in using all the senses and services. That's why we stress that devotees focus on reading Prabhupada's books, because then they have a chance to understand what is bhakti. It's not just a question of accumulating information, it's a question of developing the eagerness of the heart. We read about that. Brahmaji could understand the Lord to a little extent only when he was trying to serve him by the eagerness of his heart. Sridhav Kanchyavata, which is the devotional service mood. Therefore, the Lord can be known only by the sincere mood of eagerness for service. This is the kind of heartfelt impact you get when you read Prabhupada's books. Therefore, we need to repeatedly stress the devotion. Don't make the mistake of prematurely thinking, oh, we read Bhagavatam once, we read Chaitanya Charitamrita once, now we can read so many other things. Now, it will take all your life to master these books in terms of assimilating the devotional impact on the heart. It's not just for the brain, it's for the heart too. So I see that sometimes young devotees make a mistake of becoming like prematurely ripe fruits that jump off the tree before they are ready. I've read these books once, even twice, that just now let me read so many other things. And they never, I notice such devotees never properly consolidate in devotional service. they make the mistake of thinking Krishna consciousness is information content, like a computer. The more you have on your hard drive, the more you know. They spend time on the internet, surfing this site, that site, reading this book, reading that book, searching all India for various exotic Vaishnava texts. And so this way they become like a huge, you know, storehouse of so-called knowledge. As if, you know, mundane researching capability is going to help you understand Krishna. And, but the real result is they never consolidate you in terms of a devotional mood or attitude. And they simply remain confused up here, and the heart remains weak. So we always stress one of the pillars they build the intelligence and the heart together. It's a very rare thing. The books impact your intelligence and your heart in a united combination that changes. It's beautiful, mystical. How these books, Prabhupada's books, do both together. They satisfy your heart and your intelligence. You cannot master Krishna consciousness just by accumulating various esoteric Vaishnava knowledge. Not that way. You can enter into Krishna consciousness only by devotional eagerness for service. So that should be our distinguishing value: eagerness for devotional service. Therefore, the purport of God, how even the so-called greatest Vedic scholars cannot understand Krishna. Understanding Krishna means understanding the holy name, because the holy name is Krishna. Just as Krishna is unlimited and inconceivable, certainly the holy name is unlimited and inconceivable. So we also stress the Mahamantra meditation. The holy name is so unfathomable and profound that Lord Brahma came as a devotee of Caitanya Mahaprabhu to understand the holy name. Lord Brahma came as Haridas Thakur, the acharya of the holy name. And his service was to relish the holy name and propagate the glory of the holy name. That was his service to Lord Caitanya. He did that service so well that he asked Lord Caitanya one day, "I have one request. You see, first, the devotees of the Lord, they would every day come to see Haridas Thakur. But Haridas Thakur would not go to the Jagannath temple. He was respecting the etiquette because he was low-born. He wouldn't go to the Jagannath temple. Conventional, mundane morality. Lord Caitanya and his followers tolerated. In some cases, Lord Caitanya would inspire civil disobedience, like what he did with Kazi. But in other cases, he would tolerate mundane morality and better things too. So, the Lord's devotees came to visit Haridas, bringing him the prasad from Jagannath, because Haridas couldn't enter the temple. You cannot get to the Jagannath temple. That's more than the time you went to every day. Why? Because they just look and see if you look Hindu. Never mind, you could be too cat and dog inside, but you look Hindu. But even sometimes, Indians who've been outside of India too long, they can smell you and they say, "Ah, no, no." I could probably see. But they just go by appearance, you know. So, you know, then if you want to sneak in, you know, you have a brown complexion and you put on some tattered cloth, you know, so if you dress too nicely, you know, it's awesome. But you know, you just kind of wrap a gum shirt around your head and make your neck be tag real, you know, low and, you know. Yeah. So as you go into the Jagannath temple, they're watching.
So, Haridas Thakur, he was born in a Mohammedan family, although he's Brahma Haridas. He's Lord Brahma. He's functioning in Chaitanya Leela as Acharya of the whole name. But he didn't go. So the devotees of Mahaprabhu would bring him Mahaprasad every day. So this time they brought Haridas Thakur Mahaprasad, but they found he wasn't sitting up chanting like he does. He was chanting like 22 hours out of 24. He was laying on his back, softly chanting. Haridas, what's wrong with you? What's happening? Are you sick? And what did Haridas Thakur say? I believe that I cannot sit here. Haridas Thakur had this vow of chanting a huge number of rounds every day. So they asked him, the devotee, are you laying on your back? He responded in the affirmative, yes, I'm ill. What is my disease? I can't complete my prescribed rounds. He's a Namacharya, the teacher of the holy name. He's making a good lesson for us. You cannot finish your prescribed rounds every day. You're considered to be diseased. And the injunction is that the next day, even before eating and sleeping, you have to finish from the previous day. You think sometimes you cannot finish your rounds, you couldn't finish your rounds in one day because you're too busy. Then the next day, even if it involves, you know, foregoing meals and whatever, you have to finish them. So anyway, Haridas Thakur said, what can I do? I've taken a vow not to eat unless I finish my round. But also, the law is that as soon as Mahaprasad comes, you must honor it. So, you know, I'm caught between these two things. He offered prayers. Then Lord Chaitanya came. Lord Chaitanya would go to the area where Haridas Thakur was. And then he would take his noonday bath. So Lord Chaitanya came. Haridas Thakur begged Lord Chaitanya, please give me one day. Please. I know that you're about to end your earthly pastime. I don't want to be here when you go. So please, let me leave my body. Clasping your lotus feet to my heart, staring in your moonlight face while I chant. Lord Chaitanya, Haridas, how can you ask me of this? How can I stay in this world if you've gone? Haridas, please, my Lord, don't exaggerate. Please grant me this benediction. So, Lord Chaitanya, also, I know that God doesn't die like that. He prays like that. He prays like that. I don't want to be here after. I don't want to be here after. So, Lord Chaitanya came back the next day. Haridas Thakur was laying here. And Lord Chaitanya made a huge kirtan, chanting and dancing. And then he began to glorify Haridas Thakur, who is Lord Brahma. Glorify him like with five mouths. Did you ever think of glorifying somebody with five mouths? One mouth, one mouth. Think of the glories of Haridas Thakur as he's starting all the time. And then, after he finished that, Haridas Thakur took the Lord's feet, put them on his heart like he wanted to. Stared at the Lord's face and began to chant Jesus in the face of his Then Lord Chaitanya personally picked up his body and began to dance with it. You see, in Vedic knowledge, the body is completely contaminated. touch a dead body, you have to get back. In fact, the normal rules are to make all conventions in a debt in the family. People can't come to the temple to sit right down to do that next thing. Our established devotees, however, we don't really follow that, because in this day and age, in this time, the devotees, don't come to the temple for a few weeks because someone in their family is dead. The devotees are all spiritually dead. So, I think that's the adjustment by the circumstance. Anyway, the body is a contaminated thing, whether it's living or dead. That's why you have to bathe it so often. It's contamination. When you touch your mouth, it's the dirtiest part of the body. You have to wash that. But the Lord picks up the body of Haridasa and danced with it. Such was the devotional purity of Haridasa. That spring of Haridasa picked up his body and danced with it. The Lord personally took the body to the sea and bathed the body in the sea. And then personally dug a hole in the sand. And from all the devotees surrounding the Lord, including Haridasa Thakur and his man, the body is burnt, except for the body of Haridasa Thakur. And then the Lord personally went to the prasad booth outside the Jagannathpuri temple and opened his top cloth and begged prasad for the disappearing celebration of Haridasa Thakur. And all the shakti were prepared to give mountains of prasad to Sri Vishnudev Dhanu. But then Sri Jamadar, the Lord's personal secretary, asked, "My dear Lord, please go, we'll take care of the prasad." So Sri Jamadar got four devotees and four servants, and they got a palmful of each type of prasad from all the prasadis, and they brought it back to Lord's residence. And there all the Vaishnavas had a great feast in commemoration of Haridasa Thakur. And the Lord Chaitanya gave the benediction, and anyone who had witnessed the passing of Haridasa Thakur, anyone who put sand on the body of Haridasa Thakur to consume it, anyone who had any participation in the disappearance of Haridasa Thakur, they will obtain the mercy of Krishna. And then Lord Chaitanya took rest, feeling mixed happiness and distress. This is the way devotees feel. Happiness and distress. Feel distress in separation from the great soul, and you feel happiness in that you know Krishna's service is expanding in another way. The Lord Chaitanya felt this happiness and distress, fearful emotions, Haridasa Thakur, Lord Brahma, coming to assist Lord Chaitanya in the Yuga Dharma, propagating the holy name. Showing that this is how to know Krishna, through chanting. So we've only identified. Besides dedicating yourself to reading and distributing Prabhupada's books, also focusing on chanting of the holy name as your life and soul. And then have an eager service attitude. That's what people like about this. They keep them having eagerness, which is not material. So they want to partake in that. So these are the things they accept. Then you can understand Krishna to some extent. To
just like in Chaitanya Charitamrita, again and again it's said that Lord Chaitanya is like an ocean nectar, but you're only going to get one drop. Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami says, I'm just going to give you one drop of this unlimited ocean of Lord Chaitanya. But that one drop is enough to drown the universe. Eagerness of the heart. That's emotional. Have you ever been eager about something? You're eager? New system? Krishna, you know, ways that, you know, he likes to serve very much. So that's emotional, doesn't that emotional? So, isn't that emotional? Okay. You cannot serve Krishna without emotion. Emotion is part of you. Therefore, part of the bhakti process is to get your emotions properly situated in Krishna consciousness. Nārasandāsa Kura says, Tam Krishna Kaurāpane. You lust, use everything in Krishna's service. That's emotional, isn't it? Just like when I see nice people coming to the law. Now, service. You ever said you're not supposed to lust in this life? But lust for whose pleasure? What will become of her in the material world? Simply meant for Krishna's pleasure. Krishna consciousness is for the full person, not just the intellect, for the emotion, for the desire. The book distributors, they understand these transcendental desires and lust, because all day long they're trying to engage people in Krishna service. They learn proper desire. sanctifying so wonderful. It forms your desires in the most perfect way. Desire. It's the perfection of desire. To lust that everything should exist for Krishna's pleasure. Told me that you, as a normal matter of course, you're asking her, what do you do? What do you do? What kind of things do you do in life? And she said, no, you tell me what you do. Meeting them will never find those people. Sometimes they'll come here on their own, but often you have to meet them just by them. Gary, how did you start coming here? You met somebody or you heard about them? Yoga. Connecting to Lord Gauranga. Gaura Hari. Yes.
highlight. Chaitanya, he took sannyas just to attract the impersonal. He thought that unless you are a sannyasi, such as the chill designation of a sannyasi, you can't be spiritual. They wouldn't pay attention to Lord Chaitanya before he took sannyas. Okay, that's what you think? I'll take sannyas, you'll pay attention to me, and then I'll give you the real thing. Real Vedanta, bhakti Vedanta. So, then we have the yoga for physical postures to attract people. Part of the Gaura Yoga. And the other parts of Gaura Yoga are ecstatic facade. It's all part of Gaura Yoga. And the sadhu sangha, the association with the up and coming thinking person, it's all part of Gaura Yoga. Yeah, Iyengar Yoga is coming from South India. Gaura Yoga. Not well known in the West. Based in reality, the relationships are for real because the relationships are in relation to the supreme real. We are all relating to one another for Krishna's pleasure. Even when devotees fight all the time. I'll just forget that. Let me make my own cookies. Don't try to give me a gift. You make your cookies on this spot. Even in situations like that, it's still based on the real, because they're trying to be the emotional to the past. And what brings special life to the people, personalities of the people combining different pleasures. I'm going to ask you to see my pleasure.
and it's usually dedication.
You don't mention it in class, you'll kill me.
And I can't resist. This is such a great one. I can't resist.
So now, if you're going to do it, can you just make sure I'm not there?
He was living in fear.
Oh, well, what can I do to this?
And last night he gave me permission. I already mentioned the changes and how he changed it. People laughed. There you go. Is it right here? Oh, you can at least 16 ounces a day. That's the first thing. Then you have to work on the quality. Put your emphasis on the tongue and the ear, not the mind. That's how you execute mantra yoga. Generally, you project your mind first. But in chanting, you project your tongue and your ears first. Let it down after your mind. Don't put your mind out first thinking about something that you're doing. That's why those who aren't following regular principles in the beginning, it's very simple to realize if I'm going to effectively stand on a Krishna, I have to follow regular principles. And to follow the regular principles, you need an association to maintain your purity. That good association, germs can enter in because that's the nature of the material world. Don't take for granted that. Yeah, amongst you here, everything's always going to be it's the nature of living in the material world. The germs come in. We'll deviate from here, we'll deviate from there. One person's existing lost his brain, and everybody's going to be there. Unconsciously start getting affected. So you have to be practical and understand it's very difficult to be able to cure, and therefore you need to practice and inspire you to cure. But I was asking some couples that we all know, men and guys are living together, you want to practice this for time? About time to get married? Committed relationships, whimsical relationships, and Krishna consciousness don't go together at all. The whole package is religious. Like man and woman are meant to live together, and they shouldn't be married. Some of you say, all we want to is just our parents. And that.
see how everything is upside down. 40 years ago, 30 years ago, it would be the opposite.
So we want to live together. We want to live together, but our parents won't let us.
Now it's just the reverse. You want to live up your life with your parents? No. Don't marry first. Live together for 5 years. At least to live sex and see if you can really make it together all your life. Just see how everything's upside down. I remember as a little boy, 8 years old, there was a popular number one song in the 50s, 1958. A teenage singer. You can imagine how the song was going to that. It would even play on the radio. That's the way it was back in the 50s, you know. Everyone knew that, you know, you can't fornicate, therefore you have to marry, so, you know, there was a pressure to get married, otherwise, you know, you couldn't do the things you wanted to do. Now it's the reverse. Instead of the parents, you know, taking the heavy line, look, this young man, if you're going to be with my daughter, you better have some honorable intentions, you better marry her. That's the way it was back then. Now it's the opposite. Look, young man, you better have honorable intentions with my daughter. First, shack up with her for 10 years, then marry her. That's the way it is, you say. If you've got any kind of dignity, you all will not marry. Just live together first. You listen to me. If you've got any kind of dignity and respect, you just see the girl's father. Oh, how you doing, young man? Oh, you want to be with my daughter? No problem. Take her away. Where are you going to jack up with, you know? Yeah, just live with her, sleep with her, and, you know, tell me how it goes, you know. Maybe in 5 years, you might give me permission to marry. Try not to knock her up, but if you do, you know, we understand. We can discuss whether it will be abortion or, you know, whether. Anyway, go for it, you know. Boys will be boys, girls will be girls. We understand that. That's the way it is these days. Everything's upside down. Even the crude meat eater morality of 30 years ago is not present anymore. So in circumstances, it's very difficult for people to have a clear mind to come into this society. This is what we're struggling with. Crazy society that destroy people's minds and spiritual senses. Ladies, any questions? Who had the most astonishing success? Probably it happened to you. None of the men could do that, could you? Future yoginis. You'll take care of today. Just be. I've gone after that 14-year-old teenage rebel who ran away from home. Self-control, sense-control, yogini, and even deny herself of a Arab dream painting for the next day. Her father had a good attitude. He didn't have a good attitude. I really don't know what he's into right now, but all I know is it keeps her off the street, so more power to it. Practical parent. I don't understand it all, but, you know, hey, compared to what she was doing before, this is great, so more glory. Thinking of your own sense of these, you're thinking of Christmas service. So even you may think, oh, this is successful in a certain way, this is anxiety, but actually, other people are thinking, because they're not thinking about material things. You're thinking, how can Christmas service be better? Here I was wrapped in thought, you know, worrying about this person, and I just thought, you know, you just don't fix the game, you've got to go on vacation. That's why bhakti is a mystery. And I think it's a mystery.
Alright.